Episode 59, Community is Key, as There is No Magic Bullet. My conversation with University of Oklahoma College of Law, Kenton Bryce. Kenton is the interim director of the Law Library and the director of technology innovation at the University of Oklahoma College of Law. In his roles, Ken leads the Law Library, the OU Law Center for Technology and Innovation in Practice, and the college's digital initiative. He teaches courses and workshops on legal research, technology in practice, and innovation at the college, and speaks at multiple conferences. Through his efforts, OU Law is the first and only law school in North America to receive the Apple Distinguished School Award and has been listed as a top 20 most innovative law school multiple times. Prior to his current role, Kenton practiced with a small law firm in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, where he received honors as the Texas Appellate Lawyer of the Week and inducted into the Texas Bar Pro Bono College. I had the opportunity to interview Ken live during the ABA Tech Show last week. It was fun sitting across our guests in person, but I apologize for any background noise as the designated media room had a running air conditioning system that we could not turn off. Hopefully we limit it during post-production. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, just a quick shout out before we start. Are you enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast? Consider giving us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast feeds. Also, consider buying us a cup of coffee or two from the link on our blog to help defray some of the production costs. Thanks, and again, enjoy. Kenton, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
I appreciate you being here, and to get things started, tell us, what is your current tech setup?
My current tech setup, I have a 15-inch MacBook Pro M1 Pro processor.
Ooh. Wait, 15-inch?
Or is it 14-inch?
It's either a 14 or a 16. I have the 16-inch here.
No, it's definitely the 14-inch.
Okay.
I had an old 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Okay.
I upgraded a couple of years ago. So I've got that tied into a 27-inch monitor.
Nice.
I'm a single-screen monitor guy.
Okay, okay.
Was dual-screen, back to single-screen.
Well, so first, who is the maker of your 27-inch screen?
Dell.
Okay, and is it a 4K? Is it a 1080?
It's a 4K monitor, because I do a lot of video editing.
Okay,
and
excellent.
I try to record in 4K as much as possible for online lectures, stuff like that. Yeah, so I've got that. My favorite thing I have is my mechanical keyboard.
Okay.
Yeah. It's wireless, works with Mac.
Excellent.
It's a Logitech.
Okay.
It came out probably about 6 months ago.
But wait, I have to ask, why did you move from dual screen to single screen?
Ah, yeah, good question. So I've got this question actually from a lot of people in my own world. I moved from dual screen to single screen
right. For
focus issues.
Okay.
I actually want to upgrade, I'm working on it right now, to a 34-inch monitor. I just want one monitor.
Okay.
I like to have three documents open at one time.
Yeah.
And a 34-inch monitor is perfect at that. Dual screens, you know, it's just too much. I'm not an air traffic controller. I'm a lawyer and a law professor.
Well, you have to see my office and my recording studio because I have three screens. I have the Mac XDR, the 6K, which is gorgeous. And then I've got two 4Ks flanking left and right, an LG that I've had for a couple of years, and you know, if I had the money, I'd get two XDRs, but you know, that would just be.
Yeah, I work in higher ed, so okay. XDR's not on my radar. But yeah, and to run all of that, I used a Magic Touchpad as a mouse. I don't use a mouse anymore.
Okay, yep.
And then to run all that is my hub, which is a CalDigit TS4.
Okay.
It's a great little piece of hardware.
Excellent, excellent. Anything else in the office that you use? What about your mic?
My mic I have a Yeti Blue that I use, but generally I just use my AirPods Pro, AirPod Pros to do a lot of my recording.
Oh.
They work really well.
Okay.
Great mics on them.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I'm doing like online lectures, I'll use the Yeti.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. And we're using a Yeti Blue, which we are actually upgrading. We got a Shure MV7.
Okay.
So that goes from a condenser mic to a dynamic mic.
Nice.
And I heard the differences, and it was pretty nice. So we will have a change. And by the way, for the listener, what's rather unusual about this recording is that we're here live at the ABA Tech Show 2023, and Ken and I are sitting literally right across from each other. Normally, like my guests are on Zoom at a video call, and they're seated somewhere else, usually in another state, one part of the country or another. And so I'm having sort of a giggle moment, forgive me, because I'm seeing the person I'm actually talking to physically live in front of me. And I can tell you, as I've always told my clients when we go before the VA, that there's something special about sitting there in front of the judge or in front of the person you're talking to physically versus through a video.
No doubt. Yeah, it's interesting being here live because I think the past few podcasts I've done have been on Zoom as well.
Okay.
What's interesting about this dynamic is there's a microphone between us, and I feel like we're yelling at each other into the microphone because we have this air vent above us
that's
making some clicking noises. But yeah, it's great to be here in person. I mean, the ABA Tech Show is awesome. Glad you were patient enough with me to schedule ABA Tech Show.
I completely understand. You're a busy man. We're all busy. I get it. So, you know, if you work with me, I'll work with you.
There we go.
But hold on, we're going to go back a little bit on the tech before we get into the questions.
Okay, cool.
So first of all, you talked about Zoom conferences. What do you use for a cam?
Yeah, my webcam is the tried and true Logitech C920.
Okay.
I played around with my iPhone 14 Pro as my webcam for a little bit using Camo software.
Right.
It was really good. And then it just got too cumbersome to plug it in, not plug it in, put it back on the mount. And so I just went back to the C920.
Well, have you tried, and I apologize, I just don't remember the name off the top of my head, but the built-in function of using your iPhone as a cam with the Mac?
Yes, I have. It's the same pain point for me. Using my iPhone, because I'm in and out of my office all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm walking around the school, going to class.
Right.
I have meetings to go to, and to mount my phone, take it down, mount it, take it down, mount it. It just became a pain in the butt.
Fair enough.
But I will say the built-in stuff for Apple's great. And I'm going to give a shout out to Jeff Richardson and Brett Burney. They did a whole bit on iPhone JD about Camo versus the built-in stuff.
Yeah.
Camo is a great app. And I'll let you know, I learned about Camo from Apple themselves last year.
Okay.
And so I work with Apple. University of Oklahoma is a Apple Distinguished School. And I had remarked once in a meeting with Apple reps of how good their camera looked. And they was like, oh, yeah, it's our iPhones. We're using Camo. And I was like, huh, you guys should probably build that into your software. And they're like, huh, that's a great idea.
So you're the one that came up with the idea.
No, okay, no, probably not. Probably not.
I hope they sent you a little, like a donation to the school.
No, they don't. They don't. Not at all.
But so I have a suggestion regarding the mounting of your phone, which you're understandably it's a pain in the tuchus. Look at a product called PlexiCam. It's a clear hook that goes over your monitor and allows you to just put your phone right there or your cam right there, and it gives you eye to eye. So it can literally allow you to put your webcam or perhaps your phone in the middle of the screen so that when you're looking at the camera, you also looks like you're looking at the person you're talking to.
Oh, that's great. Cause that's the pro tip I got from Zoom a couple of years ago was put your Zoom window of the people you're looking at the very top of your screen where your camera is.
Right.
But I like the Plexi thing. That's cool. We'll try that out.
Yeah. It's like $25, $30. It's a nice device. I really do like it. So hold on. We talked about your camera. What about your phone?
My phone, iPhone 14 Pro.
Okay. Now, are you an annual changer?
Yes and no. So usually, this is the adoption of new phone technology for me is usually based on how old my kids are and how many pictures I want to take of them. And so when you have major leaps in the camera possibilities, that's when I'm upgrading my phone. I know it's weird to be a techie, but that's it. That's my use case. That's my needs analysis for upgrading my phone.
Well, you're an academics. I'm a private business person. And so I lease my phone. And so I'm always getting a new one every year.
Yeah.
And through the Apple lease program that they have is really pretty good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So we got your camera, we got your cam, and talk about your headphones. You have the Apple AirPods?
I have AirPods Pro version 1.
Okay.
And I also have two other sets of headphones that I'll switch in and out depending on my mood and what I need. I do have a pair of Bose noise-canceling headphones.
Yep.
And then I also have probably my favorite pair of headphones I've had for years, Audio-Technicas.
Okay, I've heard of them.
ATH M50Xs. And I love those headphones. I've had them for years. They're not noise canceling, but they're sick for the price point.
Try the AirPod Pro Max. The cans over the ears.
I work for higher education.
I hear you.
You have expensive taste, Michael.
Yes, I do, as my wife knows the hard way.
Where'd you go to dinner last night?
Oh, where I went was fantastic, but I also got lucky. My friends treated me to dinner, which I was pleasantly surprised. But that's a story for another day. So as I mentioned, we are here at the ABA Tech Show 2023, Chicago, Illinois, at the Hyatt Regency. And to start our first question, I have to ask, what are the top three reasons attorneys should be coming to the ABA Tech Show?
Great question. So I am on the Tech Show Planning Board this year, was last year as well. And, you know, being on the planning board, you kind of get the inner workings of what's going on. And we really, really do strive to design this show for lawyers. Now, there's a ton of different people here from all sectors of the legal ecosystem. But for lawyers themselves, for attorneys, you know, there's three main reasons that I design for as a planning board member that I hope they get out of Tech Show. The first is the community. You know, this is why it's so important to me that we're in person, and that's kind of a hot take. Some people are like, well, I want my hybrid conference, I want my online conference. Like, listen, if you want content, there's plenty of content. You come to a trade show like this or a conference like this for, one, the community. Get to know people, network. You'll never know what comes out of that later. There, we have people from all sectors of the ecosystem. You want to go talk to legal tech founders? They're here. You want to go talk to academics and how they're trying to struggle with technology in the classroom? They're here. You want to go talk to law students that you may want to recruit to work for you? They're here. So as a practicing lawyer, the community is the big piece. Network, network, network. Get in the expo hall. Go meet people. Go to parties. Really enjoy that. The second one is the tech itself. You know, we made a very concentrated effort to put the tech in Tech Show. So expo halls downstairs. Yep. We got some amazing technologies going on. You know, obviously ChatGPT is the talk of the town, like everywhere else. It seems like everybody's marketing now is just GPT. And I was like, well, that's great. And so, but yeah, we got all the tech. And so we've got everything you would ever want to run your practice. You need a tool, come here, find it.
Now, I gotta chime in here just real quick, because one thing I was surprised and excited to see was that Dell has returned. And I spoke to the Dell people because it's like, well, where have you been for the last several years? Well, you know, of course, we had COVID, which I understand. And then there were some other things going on leading into it. So they hadn't been here in 5 years. So the ABA is the preferred partner with Dell. So ABA members get a nice discount. And I think a little extra curation, if you will, assistance from Dell when it comes to purchasing their computers and products. And so I'm guessing that your new monitor that you're looking at is going to be the Dell 37. Is that 34 or 37?
134 inch. I mean, I'm in a little different world in higher ed because as an ABA member, I get a discount, but I also have to go through approved computer purchases with the university.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, all the tech is here though. And I mean, and that's a great point. You bring up a great point. It's not just software. There are hardware vendors here. If you need to know like the new Fujitsu scanning, desktop scanning.
Actually, I was just about to mention them.
It's here.
Yeah.
So.
And that is just like a mainstay for any attorney because, you know, everyone needs to be able to digitize the documents they get because quite frankly, who has filing cabinets anymore?
We should not have filing cabinets anymore. They're a security risk. But that's a different conversation.
That's not a tech issue. That's more of an office.
Process
that's
issue.
That's a footprint issue. But that's another story. So I think that was two.
Yeah. So let me talk about the third. And this is where, you know, if I think about why attorneys come to Tech Show, obviously the community, obviously the technology, but also the thought leadership. And so that's what we also try to design for, bringing in the thought leaders from around the country to come talk about how technology is being leveraged in practice. But we also want to go a little bit further than that because technology does not exist in a vacuum. We want to talk about wellness and attorneys' livelihoods. So you're going to see thought leadership through sessions throughout Tech Show that are dealing with those same issues. You know, the keynote panel this morning that Jane Reardon had a little bit to do with technology, but it was about re-regulation because technology can affect how we think about how we regulate the market, how we regulate lawyers. And so, you know, we have such amazing thought leadership. And that goes back to the community element. You go listen to that and go talk to those people. They love talking about what they are experts in. And, you know, you want to learn about document generation workflows, you're coming to the right place because you're going to find the people that are the leaders on thinking through this. I mean, I hosted my own technology competency workshop this morning for 2 hours. Got a good sized crowd in there, about 30, 40 people to go through and understand how do we define technology competency when it comes from an ethical component or a business skills component. And, you know, it's good work. And the people in that room, the amount of brain power in that room far exceeds what I can do on my own, right? So the thought leadership is here. And if you need to understand how to run your practice or what's going to happen in the future with practice, Tech Show definitely has something to offer for you.
Excellent. Excellent. So let's move into question number two. What are the top three things law students and new attorneys should be aware of when using technology?
So this is my day job, right? And so I teach technology and innovation in law practice at the University of Oklahoma through our digital initiative and some other core stuff we have. And man, I bring law students with me to Tech Show.
Yep.
Michael, you've interacted with them before.
I met some last year. Unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to meet any this year, which is not saying that I'm avoiding them. They're busy enjoying the Tech Show, which is great.
I hope so, yeah.
Which I think is great.
We got some great students here. But when I talk to my students, you know, there's three main components, I think, if I could boil it down, right? One, there's no magic bullet, right? Like technology is a tool. You know, paper and pen is technology. It did not exist at one point, it existed at another point. That's kind of like, okay, well, we need to improve something. How are we going to do that? Let's use a tool to do that. It's a piece of technology. But there's no magic bullet, right? And that's why I try to explain to them. Even right now with ChatGPT, the conversation of can this write a legal brief? Can this write my motion? What can it do? I'm like, it can do a lot. But it's not a magic bullet. It's not going to be able to replace your abilities. So you have to understand all these, I would say, you know, as I just said about the expo hall and how awesome all this stuff is. It is awesome. But you can also get into that shiny trinket syndrome. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, look at this. It's awesome. It's going to fix everything for me. I'm like, no, probably not. So that's my first lesson to them. There's no magic bullets. Now, that goes to my second one, though, is that technology does not exist in a vacuum. Right. And so I preach routinely. I call my classes more preaching sessions instead of lectures where I'm just the prophet out there, but it does not exist in a vacuum. You know, technology is a piece of the pie of the solution to a problem. Right. So is your process.
Right.
You know, John Grant out in Oregon, we did a session a couple of years ago and he always likes to talk about how process is a technology, but you know, you got technology, process and the people. You have to understand how people work. Mm-hmm. And that's the great work that's been done. I'm on the shoulders of giants there just talking about that stuff through the Delta model or the T-shaped lawyer or the whole lawyer from IELTS, the Institute for the American Advancement Legal System. Technology is just a vacuum. I try to relate that to them as much as possible. That's why I think also going back to why attorneys should go up the Tech Show, the tech's here, but so is the thought leadership. If you don't know how to apply the technology in your context, you're going to waste a lot of money and a lot of time and you're going to be really frustrated. And probably what ends up happening is you think technology is stupid. And so you got to understand how to leverage it in your context. Now, that all comes to my third point. Technology is awesome and it will change how you work. It will change how you approach your work. So when I talk to my students, you know, I talk about a third, a third, a third in my class. A third of it's going to be about business process. A third of it is about design thinking and implementation strategies. And the last third of my class is actually talking about how what technology is out there to implement. Because here's the deal. Like, if I could adopt a new technology, understand going through like a design process, now I've gone through the process, understanding what my process is and then how technology can improve it, then I can go implement it. But in that implementation, I've got to start changing how I work. And so it's like I go to this analogy a lot, and it's, you know, for lack of a better analogy, because it's just my world I live in, you know, it's a phrase that Jesus said in one of the gospels. And it's like trying to put new wine in old wineskins. If you bring in technology and try to put it into an old system and try to keep on doing it the old way, something's going to break. And most likely it's going to be, you know, somebody's mind, you know, they're just gonna be like, oh, this isn't working. Why do we invest so much money? Right? Technology is awesome. It can do a lot, but you really will change how you work. And that may go even further in what we talk about with our students. So technology can also change how you make money.
Right.
And that's the other big point. And that's a pain point for a lot of my students where I get emails from my former students about 2 or 3, 4 years out. Mm-hmm. This was all great. Now I'm in this old wineskin world and I'm like, yeah, the old wineskin's how they make money and they haven't been able to conceptualize and step back. And I get it. We're busy. I was a practicing lawyer. You know, you're busy and you don't have time to think through how I innovate my practice. I would say loosen up a little bit, right? And so just understand it is awesome. It will change the way you work. It may even change the way how you make money and your billing strategies. And so I just want my students to get their minds open just a little bit so that they can go out into practice and be that voice that's in the wilderness for me saying, hey, there's a better way to do this, isn't there? Oh, by the way, if we did it this way, leveraging this document automation platform, maybe we could flat fee some of this work and we'd scale our businesses. And so instead of me grinding it out for $250 an hour, maybe we can make $1,000 an hour.
Right. And well, you know, it's interesting you talk about new ways of thinking about how to do your business. I mean, we've been talking a lot during the tech show about subscription models.
Yeah.
You know, with Aaron Levine from Hello My Divorce.
Hello Divorce.
And,
you know, Kerbis is here. Matt Kerbis is here.
That was the person I was trying to think of.
And, you know, Kimberly Bennett's here.
Yeah.
There's a technology for this, by the way, for subscription services.
Yes.
I'm not promoting them, but Fidoo.
Ken, for our last question, what are the top three tech devices or software that new attorneys should purchase for their practice beyond a computer, a phone, and a printer?
Man, what a great question. Okay, so I'm going to divide this into two questions.
Okay.
I'm going to divide it into devices and tools.
Okay.
And software, because I want to answer both.
All right, fair enough.
I just decided that, by the way.
Okay. I am not objecting.
So I'm going to go software first.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to do four.
Okay.
Four. Reason why, you should have a case management system. If you don't have a case management system, get a case management system. So you need to have that foundational backbone for your firm, whatever it may be, right? A product it may be. Go find a case management system that works for you.
Now, that being said, must it be on the cloud?
I'm going to say most likely yes. There are specific circumstances where we'd probably – this is part of like technology doesn't exist in a vacuum, right?
Right.
You need to understand your practice, what you want to do. For the majority of lawyers, it should be in the cloud. And the reason why is with remote work, God forbid another pandemic, you got to be able to transition without having to have a major tech debacle going on. You know, the server-based days, I mean, my old firm in 2010, we made a very specific decision never to leverage a piece of technology hardware that we're going to have to replace in 5 years.
Right.
Right? Like infrastructure-wise.
Right.
We were cloud-based. Like, we don't want to maintain servers. We're lawyers and we're a small firm. Right? So most small firms, where you can go pay an outside IT consultant a bunch of money to maintain your server, or you're just going to go through a subscription for the same software. And so I think, you know, for the majority of lawyers, I said it needs to be cloud-based. Now, everybody's got their own context. Everybody's got their own budgets. Everybody's got their own history that they're bringing into 2023.
Right.
But now, I mean, cloud-based case management systems, I think, are the norm. They should be the norm. And I would say you have to have an exception if you're not using a cloud-based system. All right. So cloud-based case management system. And then I'm going to go straight to the Clio Legal Trends Report from a couple of years
ago. Okay.
A CRM, a client portal, and a software to take electronic payments.
Now, hold on. Let's go through each piece so we define it for the listener. So first of all, the Clio Trends Report is?
So the Clio Trends Report is a research report that comes on every year in October at the Clio Cloud Conference. They release it. They've been doing this since 2018. You have to fact check me on that. 2017? No, maybe 2016. They've been doing it since 2016.
Okay.
They've been doing it for a while. And so what they do, and I'll let Josh Lennon and those guys talk about how they actually do it, but they kind of, you know, anonymize and aggregate a bunch of data. But then they started getting into more research work where they're going to go hire firms to do research with them, consumer surveys, things like that. And so they publish this report, and it's kind of like showing what's going on in the legal market. And I love that report. It comes out every year, and it helps me give some kind of baseline data to talk about issues in the legal industry. So in 2021, fact check me on that, or 2022, I can't remember. It's been a couple of years, you know? Your brain gets a little scrambled with 3 years of being inside. They had this data point where it said that attorneys that were leveraging three pieces of technology were making more money per associate or per fee earner in their firms than other firms that did not use these three technologies. And they were client portals, electronic payments, and a CRM. And so that's where the rubber hits the road. If you want to talk about, if I might tell my students, if they're going to launch their own firm or go into a firm, and they want to know what are the top four technologies. I say case management. Case management may do all of that. It may not do all of that. It may do all of that, but not very great. And so you may need to go get additional tools to plug into your case management system or to integrate through Zapier or through some native API integration. But when we talk about CRM, a customer relationship management system, you know, we use Salesforce at the university, and it's a way of tracking relationships and using data in relationships to make better decisions about those relationships. Maybe that's profit, maybe that's something else. But the great thing about CRM and why it's different than a case management system is it tracks a relationship, not a case or a matter.
Right.
Right. And so it's supposed to cover your entire client relationship from the early stage cold lead that hits your website
right.
all the way through a satisfied client and how you're leveraging that relationship for referrals. Right. You don't represent them anymore. So they're not going to be in your case management system.
Right.
You still have to maintain that relationship. And you should have a system for that. Lawyers have always had systems for that. It's called a Rolodex. Now we have technology that's more advanced to understand
right.
where our leads are coming from, where our business is coming from, where our pipelines are. What's our pipeline for success for business? Where those look like? Where's our lead generation actually working? We have those sessions here at Tech Show, by the way. So I'll let the experts talk on that. So yeah, CRM. Major, major point of emphasis. Next one is client portal. I lecture a lot mm-hmm. on the use of client portals instead of the use of email. They're way more secure for sending sensitive documents.
Mm-hmm.
Notice to everyone listening to this podcast, if you did not know, email is not secure. And so we have an ethical duty. Go read your ethical rules. To use reasonable means, right? Reasonableness is the standard
right.
to prevent unauthorized disclosure or access to client information. Well, if you're sending really sensitive client information or any confidential information over an unencrypted email, you're probably in violation of that rule. And so using a client portal hijacks that whole process for you.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in the client portal. You send a notice to your client. They get the link. And the client portal also can open up other functionalities. I love my doctor. I'm going to say that, Dr. Brian, if you're listening, you're a great doctor. And the reason I love you is you create the most frictionless experience possible. I set up an appointment through my portal. We already have an established relationship. Remember, this is already established
right,
relationship.
Right.
Set up appointments through my portal to meet with you. You send me reminders. And then it says click into the portal to, guess what? Fill out an intake form for the meeting I'm going to have with you.
Right.
He has all the data already when I show up. I don't have to fill out any forms. I just show up at the office and I say, I'm here to meet Dr. Brian. They say, what's your name? I say my name. And you know what? Dr. Brian has all my data,
mm-hmm.
all the information that's pertinent to my appointment. And I love it. It's frictionless.
Mm-hmm. Frictionless, I think, is the word.
I get high value out of my doctor
mm-hmm.
instead of the low value stuff that doesn't matter. And that's all because of the portal. So client portal, big deal. And one that enhances client communication and they can get the status of their matters, right? I get the status of my prescriptions or whatever it may be through my client portal. I don't have to call them and say, hey, I need to get a refill on my prescription. Guess what? I go on the portal. I get a refill. That's it. It's already been pre-approved. I don't have to call them, which I love that. Now, legal, okay, what's the status of my case? What's going on with my case? Where are we at in my process? What's going on? Well, one, have you explained the litigation process if you're in litigation?
Right.
What about the contract negotiation? Where are we at? I don't know. What version of the contract are we on? All that should be in a portal that they can access anytime they want, and you should be more transparent with your practice. And the third one, electronic payments. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
2023.
Yep.
What are we doing? Are we still taking checks? You know, I haven't written a check in 5 years. I don't carry cash. You know, we live in a cash, quote unquote, cashless society. I still know lawyers that still require their clients to come into their offices and deposit a check with the reception to pay their bill.
Wow.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So electronic payments, it should be part of your case management. If it's not, we have vendors downstairs that will offer you a solution for
right,
that.
Right.
Now, I want to say this because I tell this to my students. Because they always ask me, well, all this stuff costs money, doesn't it? I'm like, yes, it does cost money. But that's called an investment, not a cost. You need to be thinking differently about how your spend is with overhead. If your overhead is your investment into the tools that will make you money,
right?
That's an investment mentality. If you just think of it as a cost, you're going to try to cut it as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have these issues in higher ed. I have to talk to people that make decisions about purchasing all the time. Like, is this really a cost or is this an investment?
Right.
And so my students, you know, they, a lot of them never, most of them have never been in a business before. They're coming straight through.
Right.
They K through 12, undergrad, law school. And they were like, wow, $500 a month for all this technology. That's a lot of money. I'm like, you're right. But you know, you're trying to make money too. Right. And so if you can make an additional $20,000, $30,000 a year from adopting these technologies, according to the data from Clio, I think it's worth the $6,000 investment.
But you know, there's a way, I think, also a different way to think of this. So it's an investment. I get it. So it's $500. Let's say it's $500 a month. Okay. At the same time, think of the money that you're saving. In other words, you don't have a receptionist at the front that you have to pay on an hourly basis or on a salary to make sure she or he are sitting there, you know, in their butt to greet people coming into the door. Because look, many attorneys are moving towards a virtual office, you know, where they're, or maybe they're just not even coming in that often. And so they're saving money on the overhead of a brick and mortar office, the time of, you know, going to and from work, the cost of getting up and dressing up in a suit, the time that's invested with all of that. And those are tons of savings, dry cleaning, purchasing and repairing suits.
No, those are great points. So what I would say also, I go back to question two, what three things should law students and new attorneys be aware of when using technology? You know, this is understanding that business mindset.
Right.
You know, if you don't understand your process, if you don't, so here's what I'll say. If you go through, so I got my Lean Six Sigma Green Belt certification a couple of years ago. And the reason why was to understand from disciplines outside of law what could help improve the legal profession and improve what I teach. I've always been a process guy, but I finally got some formal language around it.
Okay.
You know, if you're going through a design or a process improvement exercise, the one question from a business is ROI. That's right. The big thing. And so you start, it's like a hypothesis when you start this process improvement or design methodology. Like, I think I can improve things such an extent that this is my ROI. And then you go through the thing and then you're like, well, did my hypothesis come true or not? It's the same thing as the scientific method. But so with ROI, I'm like,
but hold on, just for the listener, ROI.
Right, return on investment, right? And so you're looking at the amount of either time or money or other resources that you are going to spend to improve whatever your current process is. That's your denominator. Your numerator is the improved state.
Right.
And I would say this, if you're going to go through this process, come to OU Law, we'll teach you and I'll teach you, come pay me tuition, it's awesome. Or just think about it like this, right? My improved state over my over the investment it took off my existing state. If your ROI is less than 100%, you should not go for it. Now, most of the time, you'll see this in lean thinking or Lean Six Sigma thinking. Most of the time, that ROI, if you really go through the exercise and actually adopt new technologies that improve your processes, your ROI is going to be like 20,000%.
Gotcha.
30,000%. Because for legal practice, what we've been doing as a profession for 100 years is ripe for process improvement and technology adoption. That's why the numbers from the Clio Trends Report, in my mind, are so stark. When you say, oh, you adopt three technologies, you're going to make an additional $30,000 to $40,000 per fee earner. I'm like, yeah, because the stakes are so low. Like, it's just like the denominator. You're just like, oh, my gosh, the current state of affairs is so, I would say backwards, just kind of antiquated, that if you put any kind of technology on top of a process to improve it, you're going to see a massive increase in what you can do. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that. And that's where you get these subscription-based services, these scripture, like Aaron, what we talked about earlier, which you mentioned earlier. You're only able to do that type of billing structure because you went through this process.
Right.
You understood your process. You understood your knowledge.
Right.
And you understand that there's technology to put on top of that to really create efficiencies. So that really changes how you think about making money. You got to go through the whole process of doing that.
Pardon the interruption. I hope you're enjoying this episode. Consider sharing this show with others. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your download feeds. If you're listening directly from our blog, consider buying us a cup of coffee or two from the link on our blog to help defray some of the production costs. Thanks again and enjoy.
So correct me if I'm wrong. I think you answered part one of question three with the four pieces of software. I just want to make sure I have that down. I'm sure in my head I have that down. The reason why I'm kind of pausing here a little bit in this conversation for the listener is that, you know, I could think that one thing the listener may be worried about is like, well, fine, I picked this one practice management program, but holy crap, you know, I made a mistake. So I'm hesitant at first to even start something like that. And then I realize I'm making a mistake. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because the award winner for the Startup Alley was a company I will put in the show notes that basically won for universally being able to transfer the data set from one practice management software to another. So if it's say, and you know, no offense to you, but if it's like Clio to Smokeball, sure, or Smokeball to Filevine,
anything,
or et cetera, et cetera. So this way, if you're not happy with the one you get, you have the ability to easily, now, of course, there's going to be a price point, I'm sure, to transfer it to another practice management program that will allow you to see, hey, maybe this is a better fit for me. So yeah. I thought that was exciting for the recipient.
I'm glad you said that, because when I was watching the startup pitch competition, again, another reason why to come to Tech Show, like you see the new coolest and greatest stuff.
And even if they don't win, you still see
cool.
it.
There's some cool stuff.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Absolutely.
You know, the Universal Migrator, I think it was yes. called. And, you know, it is – I was standing in the back of the room with some other legal tech founders and other people kind mm-hmm. of watching. And when they pitched – I was just like, man, where were you 10 years ago?
Really?
because I've done this. I've mm-hmm. migrated from one yeah. system to
Same
another.
Here.
And you know, I was the guy who had to do migration as a lowly associate mm-hmm. in the office. I'm not saying that was a bad thing. I mean, I had a great job and I loved my firm and they were great guys and girls. And but you know, the process of doing that's not why I went to law school.
Exactly.
Right? I didn't go to law school to migrate data from Clio to Filevine or from – and the great thing about what they promoted, I haven't seen it in action yet,
right,
but
right.
I'm just saying what their pitch was, oh, you can – if your firm splits up
or right. yes. oh,
you're
yes.
bringing in more attorneys yeah. from other firms, yeah. you're adopting books of business, oh, just use us and we can do all that for you. And I'm like, where were you 10 years ago?
Oh, I had that problem. I went from one practice management program to another, and I'm like, I still had to babysit some of the old stuff to make sure I had it over there.
Yeah, so I'll say this. This is why that was so fantastic to me, because mm-hmm. in agile thinking as well as in other process improvement and design thinking, you're always thinking fail often, fail fast. Right? You want to fail fast because you want to learn quickly what's right. working, what's not working.
Right.
So if you adopt, I don't promote any product as my own because I work for higher ed. I don't work right. for anybody. So, but let's say you adopt case management system A.
Right.
3 months later, 4 months later, you give it that test run. Hopefully you're going through an evaluated process to actually understand your needs mm-hmm. and do your needs assessment. And you scored it and you adopted it. But things sometimes just don't work out in the real world. If it's 3 or 4 months later, you need to fail fast and know it's not going to work for you and move on to case management system B, right? Now, this tool allows you to fail fast.
Like, yes.
And removes a lot of the headache from the ideas of failing fast. Because when you talk about this to lawyers, I do, they're like, well, yeah, but if I adopt something, I don't want to fail fast. I have to be right. Because right. the cost of transition – from one system to another, to take that time or go hire somebody is a major pain point for mm-hmm. people.
Absolutely.
And so it keeps them from adopting process right. improvement and strategies. So now if we have tools, technology,
right.
which is awesome if we use it, not you know, understand how we can use it, this is where this stuff gets really cool. Because if I can just transition from one to another and the pain – and probably the other legal tech companies here don't like hearing this – but if the pain is less for me – then I get to fail fast. Now, hopefully you're failing fast so you find the right solution that works for your firm and makes you good and makes you good money. Right?
You know, in a personal story, like 10 years ago, I was switching from one practice management program to another. And the new practice management program I was moving into, one of the things I liked that we were doing was workflows. Mm. Now, unfortunately, at that time, you had to like hire a programmer to do all that stuff for you, which was fine. And I did that, and then apparently the programmer had some problems, which, you know, understandable, but at the same time, it's frustrating. And then the practice management program was telling me, well, you can't use our product until your workflows are done. And I'm like, well, that's, you know, that's that's really a waste of my time. So part two.
Devices. All right. Tools, fun stuff. Fun stuff. That's why I call it. You know, I, as a lawyer, the probably one of the most valuable things to me outside of my computer, my phone, or my printer is a really good pair of headphones.
Okay.
For a couple of reasons. One, I need to focus when I work.
Right.
And, you know, a good pair of AirPods, and this goes into the software thing too, but you need the hardware to support the software. So right, I use a software called Brain.fm.
Okay.
I love this software. It helps you focus. It's a, I don't even know what the technology's called. I'm not a brain scientist. I'm a lawyer and higher and law professor. But it's fascinating because it really works. And they're funded by an NSF grant to try and figure this out. But you have to have a good pair of like noise canceling headphones. Also, I would say, you know, I remember those late nights of working and briefing and I put on my headphones and you just get in a zone. You want to get in that flow state when you're working that distractions just kind of melt away.
Right.
And you know what? It's really good at that. A good pair of headphones. So good pair of headphones all day long, whether it be AirPod Pros, invest in good headphones. I know I kind of gave you a hard time earlier about AirPods Max, you know, being so expensive, but if that's what it takes.
But the noise canceling on that is fantastic.
If that's what it takes, get that good pair of headphones. I'm serious. Like this is like so like base levels things.
Well, you know, it's funny because to leave for this trip, I loaned my wife my AirPod Pro Max because there was construction going on in the house and she had meetings and businesses and whatnot. And she's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get any work done. And I said, well, here, try these. And if they work, fantastic. Because I have the AirPods, the, you know, the like the second generation AirPods, which I originally got way back when, because it's great when you're like walking about traveling because you don't want to like tune out the world because if like a car's coming or someone's trying to call your name, you need to be able to hear it. I borrowed my wife's AirPod Pros, the middle ones, like the ones that you're digging out right now that has some noise canceling to it. And I could tell the difference between hers and mine. It's like I had them in, and I didn't realize that the noise canceling was on because I could hear things. Not a lot of things, but I could still hear things.
Yeah.
And like when I was on the airplane, I could hear the person over the PA system talking.
Yeah.
But I couldn't hear the airplane.
Yeah.
Which was nice. So I was just surprised. But I understand what you're saying. And there's a price point for everybody. And I absolutely get it.
Invest in a good pair of headphones.
Right.
Like if it's $1,000. And you think that's going to improve your work for the next 5 years, invest in it. That would be my thing. It's like, that's why I say investment versus cost. So headphones.
One.
All right.
One. Two.
Two. Now this is, I would say post-it notes. However, because I, you know, if you're on the phone, you can take a quick note. That's how we all used to do it.
All right.
Either a diary or a journal. So a couple of years ago, I upgraded and I have a whiteboard desk. My entire desk is a whiteboard.
Oh, okay.
And it is a stand-up desk. So it's by Uplift,
right.
Company. So it's a stand-up desk, motorized. But the entire desk, it's 6 feet by 3 feet of just straight whiteboard. And I have Expo markers or dry erase markers on my desk. And so when I'm on the phone, on a Zoom call, I'm just jotting notes down on my desk.
Okay.
And then I take a picture of my notes, put it in my OneNote app.
Okay.
And that's awesome because now I don't have to worry about finding the post-it notes or where's that piece of paper that I was going to take notes on. Where's my legal pad?
Right, right.
If I'm on the phone or somebody calls me or Zoom meeting, I mean, it is like really, like, it's so simple. I mean, you know, you're just like, but we did this in 2016 at the law school.
Okay.
We put in writable surfaces in our study rooms for our students.
Oh.
And I was like, and they were using them. I was like, I'm going to do that in my office. And so I did. And it's really improved how I operate meetings because I'm not searching around for things. I get to focus. It's all about focus, right?
Right, right.
So, yeah, another like, okay, headphones, whiteboard desk. Everybody's like, who is this guy? Yeah. Like, who is this weirdo?
Not me. I'm going. I agree with you.
A whiteboard desk. It'll change everything.
I personally use Drafts, the program Drafts.
Okay.
Because it allows you to integrate to other programs. So
sure.
It's just a way for me to capture thoughts, or especially like during a meeting, if I just need to put down a couple notes and deal with it later, it will always be there. It syncs across my devices, and it's backed up in the sense of everything that I have is backed up already.
So I'm gonna do four again because you know, you bring up a good point, and I use this technology all day, and I have an iPad, and I have the Apple Pencil.
Okay.
And I don't take notes on paper anymore because paper's mm-hmm. easy to lose. Mm-hmm. And so meetings, whatever. Now, I'll say this. I've had the iPad for years. And the pencil, when it came out 5 years ago, was just revolutionary. Okay. I mean, it's the best writing system. Now, I'm in the Apple environment. I'll just be honest. I'll out myself right now.
It's okay.
Yeah, Ben Shore's here from Microsoft showing off his Surface. Damian Real from Fastcase showing off his Surface. I was like, that's great, guys. That's great. I'm already in an ecosystem.
Right.
Sorry. So I would say I wouldn't say iPad specifically, but find a writable digital device. Whatever works for you.
Right.
And one that I want to buy, but I will not buy right now because I, like I said, work for higher ed.
Right,
my budgets are limited, is the Remarkable 2.
Yep. I've heard a lot about that.
I've got a couple of faculty members that are using it. They've showed it to me. They let me play around with it. And I think I'd probably use that way more than my iPad for actually just taking notes and handwriting notes and marking up books and things
okay.
like that.
Okay.
So I would say a digital writable Surface, whatever that's going to be. And I think the iPad and the Remarkable 2 and probably the Microsoft Surface is going to be your where you're going to go for that.
For the iPad, have you seen that new film that you can put on top
online,
of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The paper feel.
How is that?
It's great. I love it.
So can you really tell a difference between?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
A lot of people don't like the iPad because they feel like they're writing on glass. And right. Just weird feeling to them.
I need to get that myself.
Yeah. I have the paper feel. You go to Amazon. Mm-hmm. We can maybe put a link in the show notes.
Absolutely.
But there's an it's like one of those products that's got a really funny name on Amazon, you know? So, but it works great. I will email it to you.
Please.
Because I use it on mine. And yeah, absolutely. So the fourth one, again, going kind of old school, but also really practical.
Fair enough.
Is a USB drive that's encrypted, but it has the USB-C side and the USB-A side.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And I was digging around my bag. I can't find it with me, but it's about a half inch big.
Okay.
And it's got one side is just the USB-C port and the other side is USB-A, which is great if you travel or you're going to court, you need to plug in somewhere, take your presentation with you. You know, you never know. I live in Oklahoma. I get it. Rural courts don't have the best connectivity sometimes. And so you can just throw that on a keychain and go. And now you have 128 gigabytes on your keychain. And it doesn't matter what the destination device is. If it's a MacBook Pro from a couple of years ago where all they have is USB-C, or if it's a PC and it's 15 years old because you're in a courthouse, right? It's like, just plug it in. You're fine. And it's encrypted and you have the password. That's the encryption key. So your data is safe. So that little device, I have one. It's probably up in my room. But that thing, I love it because it doesn't matter where I'm going. I make sure I carry that with me with any presentation, just in case Wi-Fi fails or cloud-based services fail. I have the materials I need. That's super practical, but for a practicing lawyer, especially if you're a litigator, that is going to be a great little tool. And also, if you're using the iPad, the USB-C works in the iPad as well as a external storage device for your mobile device.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because I did a presentation at a law school like a year and a half ago, and I brought my USB device, and I also had it, like I sent it to whoever, and I think I had another copy of it somewhere, but for whatever reason, their whole system just wasn't working. And this sort of brings me back to my first guest, Judge Dixon, from like 3+ years ago, who, of course, was a former chair. I believe was he chair or was he a board member on the tech show, Bonnie?
I do not know.
I do know he's presented here, and you know, the whole thing comes down to that, regardless of all the technology, if you don't know your case, no technology is going to help you.
That's right.
And because, so even though my whole presentation slides were not available, I knew everything that I put on there and I was able to wing it. And I got like 80-90% of the stuff out just by talking. You know, I'm not sure if the students were excited about not seeing anything on the screen, but hopefully it was animated enough to get the point across. I'm sorry, you're going to say something.
No, this is great. I was thinking like, man, it's really hard to give a technology demo without technology. Just, you know, if the technology's not working, you have to do a session on how to use Microsoft Word. And you're just like, okay, just imagine with me for a minute. Layers of menus.
So I have to ask you, you brought up Microsoft Word, and that's been a pet peeve of mine over the years that a lot of students, that, you know, I hire students, law students, as part-time clerks to help out, gives them a chance to learn, gives them a chance to create a writing sample, helps me out, et cetera. But I've noticed that law students seem not to know how to use the formatting and the functions and the titling and, you know, the table of contents, the table of authorities, next pages, page breaks. Mm-hmm. I mean, where is that disconnect? What am I missing that they're not? Because like I can't picture them just typing everything in 12-point times font and just using spaces constantly to do the indentation. Because, I mean, I used to collect comic books way back when, and I used to be like really big at finding the right comic book without any of the creases and making sure no pages were bent, et cetera, et cetera. And I can see on a screen, whether you have the little paragraph show functions or not, I can see where someone's used spaces or something's done something, or your case tables don't automatically update because somebody didn't use the table function on that. Please.
So many thoughts. Okay, so
Let's limit it to three.
Let's go three, and then we'll have to wrap up. So
yes,
here's the thing. All right, so a couple – this is layered. First, most law students are coming through a K-16 education system.
Right.
And their first exposure to Microsoft Word is in law school.
How are they doing their high school papers?
Google Docs. So here's the thing. So Google has found ways to market themselves as a collaborative platform in the K-16 market. So there's whole school districts that adopt Google. There's universities that adopt Google, and everything's done in Google Docs, right? Law schools are professional schools. We are not K-16. We are professional schools creating professionals for the advancement of democracy and the protection of society. Okay. So we have to use professional tools. If you're an English major, you're probably using Google Docs. If you're a political science major, you're probably using Google Docs. And so most law students, I actually had this just 3 weeks ago, because our students right now at the recording of this podcast at Tech Show, our 1Ls at University of Oklahoma are in the middle of writing their appellate brief, their capstone project for legal writing in the first year program. And I had a student reach out to me a couple of weeks ago, needed some help with something. I teach Microsoft Word sessions and workshops at the university. So I would say, if they're my students, let me know, because I'm going to probably go find them. And like, you need to pay more attention in these workshops. But yeah, I had the student and she needed help and she had not attended one of the workshops I did. And she's like, this is the first time I've ever used Microsoft Word. So you're getting that. And you go talk to any other person in higher ed, they're probably going to tell you something.
But doesn't Google Docs at least have tabs and paginations and tables of contents, or is it just automatically done for them?
Sort of.
And, you know,
I'm going to say the sort of, because the one thing I this is what I tell my students, like, build me a table of authorities in Google Docs.
Okay.
And they say, what's a table of authorities? So, right. I mean, obviously, they're 1Ls. When's the last time a non-law student that has not a lawyer built a table of authorities? Never. It is something that's a product of the legal industry for legal briefing. Table of contents is different, but table of authorities.
No.
But show me where all the authorities of state statutes show up on a page, like throughout your
right. I'm tracking.
So here's the thing. So it's that. That's one headwind. Okay.
Right.
The other headwind is for the students that use Microsoft Word that think – I keep interrupting myself. So I did this survey in 2017 of 1Ls, first-year students. I had been working at the university for about 2 years. And I was just curious. So all 1Ls had to take this survey. And first question is a three-question survey. First question, rate yourself on how proficient you think you are with Microsoft Word. Second question, how often do you use styles? Third question, do you know how to modify a style? Okay. Now, the second question is a trick question. It should be 100% of people answer yes.
Right.
Because you're always using styles in Microsoft Word. There's no way not to use styles.
Right.
Because even if you direct format something, you're still just direct formatting over the normal style.
Right.
And so I think it was about like 67 to 68%, about two-thirds of students said they were proficient or highly proficient in Microsoft Word. Next question. How often do you use styles? About 80% of people say never. Mm. So there's a big disconnect
right.
between – what students think they know in Microsoft Word mm-hmm. and what they actually know in Microsoft Word. Right. And for lawyers, that's true too. That's why at Tech Show, we have Baron Henley yelling at everybody about Microsoft Word. If you go to any of his sessions, you just feel he's being super aggressive about Microsoft Word, but it's trying to get through to people that have been doing things for a long time. So there's that headwind. We think we know more than we do when it comes to this technology. What Maya usually say and what a lot of people here say is, you're generally just using Microsoft Word as an electric typewriter.
Right.
You're not using it as a word processor.
Right.
So, and some of it is, I mean, I'm going to go back to the K-16 education. No one's ever sat down with a law student and said, hey, let me show you the better way. Right? And so, and it was not happening in law school. They're just going to continue thinking they're awesome at it because they know how to make something bold. Right? And so you say, hey, build for me a table of contents. They're going to write in the heading and then they go, you can hear this on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Page number. They're going to do it again. Press enter. Yep. Do it again. And instead of, hey, I'm leveraging a heading in Microsoft Word as a style and I'm going to build my table of contents off of these headings. Right? No one's ever shown them that that's a possibility. So how do they know? And so it is kind of a disservice to the profession when law schools say, or painting broad brush here, because not all law schools are like, our law school's not like this. There's a lot of law schools that are really trying to think through how do we develop these skills in our students. And, you know, there's, and that is growing. It is growing because
it's
it's needed. Exactly.
It's needed because I've trained many students on how to do this.
Well, and some of it, I mean, no schools by name, but broad brushes. Most law schools would say we are not that type of school. We are not a trade school. We are not going to, for lack of a better term, whoever's listening to this podcast, please don't email me hate mail. We're not going to debase ourselves to teach software skills. That's a typing school, right? That you should have learned that in high school. Guess what? They're not learning it in high school.
No, not at all.
You take a typing class, they're not telling you how to leverage styles in Microsoft Word. They're teaching you how to do a QWERTY keyboard, maybe.
I did that
in 1996. And so we've got to have a little more humility in how we design our education systems to actually best serve the people that we're trying to educate and the profession as a whole. And Microsoft Word is a part of that because it's such everyone uses it in the legal profession. Go look at any survey. Like I know people are like, well, Google Docs is the next thing. Go look at the information. You want to use Google Docs, awesome. Your first job, they're going to be like, no, you're not using Google Docs.
And that's what I would tell any clerk that would
exactly.
come to me.
And that's what every firm's going to tell.
But you know, regarding about the school thinking versus, you know, we're not a trade school, we're this. And I mean, think about like a particular Ivy League law school.
No names.
I said Ivy League. That I said, they're like, we'll never have like a working student. But I think they're doing that now where, you know, they have the ability to do internships and externships during the school year to actually get practical experience. That the name of the school, and again, no names, is not enough to get you through the door.
Right. And you're seeing that more and more. And that's why I say, like, we're seeing efforts by mm-hmm. schools around the nation to really start thinking through how do we start integrating some of this in our curriculum. And I'll tell you, it's hard because if you're a law professor and you're already like have a full course load,
right.
and you're now being told by someone like me, like, you've got to adopt this extra thing. They're like, I have no time to adopt this extra thing. And so what we're seeing a lot in the past 5-10 years, and this is just kind of self-aggrandizement as well, mm-hmm. is you're seeing law librarians really step up. And they're saying, hey, we are going to assist in this work that needs to be done. We are peer professionals. We are legal information professionals. We know how to do skills development in legal research. Let's do skills development in technology as well. And that includes Microsoft Word. And so we know how to talk to vendors. We've been doing it for years with research vendors. We know how to go understand like what that market looks like to bring it into a classroom environment and where the pain points are. And so I you know, a good example of this was at the American Association of Law Libraries annual meeting back in summer 2022 in Denver. We had a whole pre-conference workshop. It was all about training the legal tech teacher.
Right.
It was sold out. These are all law librarians. Sold out.
Cool.
over 50 people are there from various institutions around the country saying, how do we do this? We need to do this. And that's so encouraging. So 10 years ago, most people were like, no law schools do this. Now it's, hey, there's a good chunk of law schools trying to figure this out. And it's not hard. It's not easy to figure out. Even like how to integrate Microsoft Word training in a legal writing curriculum, you've got to put some energy behind it. And now law librarians are starting to step up to that.
Well, why? I mean, not to ask a silly question, but why can't you just put some sort of online course to make the students do that? So this way it's not interfering with the professor's normal curriculum. And they can do it at their own leisure, but it still has to be done by a certain time.
Yeah, you're seeing that develop. They're not here at Tech Show, but Procertis is. But Procertis is one of those entities that's really trying to tackle this. And you know, they're a great platform for training in Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint, and a PDF solution. And my institution, you know, we use Procertis. I make certain students go through it. It's voluntary in some other aspects.
It needs to be mandatory.
And it is. Here's the problem about making it mandatory, though. It's not free. And so if you're going to go tell a smaller school with a cash-strapped budget, you got to go pay an X amount of thousands of dollars extra to adopt this. They're going to look at their budget and say, well, how? Let me get a donor maybe or something like that.
You know, unfortunately, you have to increase the tuition. I mean, I have to say this, like, because tuition is just skyrocketed, and
that's the thing. And so there's so many the larger conversations about higher ed in general, because tuition issues, you worry about the value of the degree, you worry about student loan debt. I'm fortunate. I work for a best value law school. We've been best value law school for the past 15 years.
Congrats.
And we wear that. I mean, it's like, it is part of the fabric of OU law. We want to make sure our students are getting best bang for their buck. And we, you know, we're not cheap either. That's what I'm saying. We are, and when I mean cheap, like we're not going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you want to travel to this conference, you got to take it out of your own personal funds. Like we actually want to develop our people, but we're very strategic about how we're spending our money. And so we've been doing that for years. And it does help that we're in Norman, Oklahoma. The cost of living is not that expensive. You know, so you know, we have some of these other things at play. So if you think about, hey, I need to go pay X amount of thousands of dollars for this technology trainer and certification platform. Well, if you're not already strategic in how you're trying to think through spending your money, that's just going to be another cost. Going back to cost versus investment, right? And so that's why I say in higher ed, we have these conversations, cost versus investment in my school. And so the technology is out there. The vendors are out there. Where you don't have to do this recreate the wheel kind of scenario all the time, but it does cost money. And higher ed is not a for-profit entity. Our bottom line is a very different bottom line than a law firm environment. And we have a lot of different pressures. And that, like I said, bigger conversations could be had for more hours of podcasting on those topics.
Fair enough. Ken, tell us where people can find you.
Yeah. So I'm at the University of Oklahoma College of Law. If you Google my name or you search with Bing or AskJeeves.com.
Ask Jeeves?
Yeah, it's been dead for 20 years.
Okay.
Just a joke.
Okay, because if someone asks Jeeves, they're going to go, well, first they're going to ask, Jeeves, where are you? Because I think Jeeves has been dead for years.
Yeah, years. So yeah, if you search for me, just Kenton Bryce, OU Law, my faculty bio page will pop up. Or you can just email me, kbryce@ou.edu. You can also find me at LinkedIn. I'm the only Kenton Bryce on LinkedIn. So just search my name. You'll find me. Twitter, @KentonBryce. Yeah, I'm everywhere. Or just come to Tech Show. Come hang out, too. You know, I'd love to hang out with you here, too.
Well, unfortunately, people can't come to the 2023 Tech Show because we are on the last day. But hopefully, we'll see everyone at the 2024 Tech Show. And Ken, I want to thank you again for being here. And it was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast. Our next episode will be posted in about 2 weeks. If you have any ideas about a future episode, please contact me at MichaelDJ@TechSavvyLawyer.page. Have a great day and happy lawyering.